Should we wish our community Happy New Year's?
We can on the tail. We can do Happy New Year's, or maybe we can ask.
What's your New Year's resolution?
I was thinking, like, what are you playing? Why not talk about that? We don't talk about that at all. You're playing Bone.
I really don't.
All right, fine.
It always goes bad.
Fine. What are you doing for the holidays?
Deej could die over the holidays.
This is Deej coming to you from beyond the grave in the Bungie podcast.
Yeah. We can't just surmise that he's going to survive the 2-week break and then set
you're
up
to be by yourself over the holidays in Seattle.
I could just expire on my couch.
You know what we could do, though? We could do the segment you're talking about where we talk about what we did on the holiday break that is actually upcoming in our real lives today. And we could record a memorial for Deej in case he does die and doesn't make it through the holidays.
Man, I don't really miss Deej. No, I thought I was going to.
Thought he was adding a lot of value to the podcast, but it turned out he was just, didn't really need him at all.
No, it's fine. No. We seem to be doing just fine without him.
Yeah. I mean, there's the Twitter thing, but that's super easy.
There's an app for that.
Yeah.
You know, he sat there with all of the browsers open, with all the different Twitter accounts he has, instead of using, like, what is it, TweetBot or something?
He was still using Internet Explorer, too.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
No TweetDeck, just full manual.
Seriously.
We're the Bungie kids.
That's it. There's your intro right there.
We're the Bungie kids, with fusion rifles glowing. It's a podcast show with Lurk and Deej, space magic.
Welcome and welcome to the Bungie podcast. Happy
welcome
New
and
Year.
And welcome. Welcome
double and welcome. Double welcome.
Sweet.
It's a double helping of welcome to the Bungie podcast. It is a triple helping of hosts. I'm Deej. I'm with Irk.
Hello.
And I'm with Hal Salon.
Hello.
There was a brief pause where I thought you wanted me to introduce
myself. That's what I thought too.
It felt like an awful lot of work on my behalf.
I was going to let you take it.
Are you the host or are you not the host?
Yeah, seriously.
I am the moderator.
All right.
I'm the host with the most.
So we've got a pretty awesome show lined up, right?
This is going to be a badass show.
This is our post Game Informer window. We just dropped a pretty epic payload on a bunch of fans who wanted some more details. They've got those details. Of course, there's still people asking for more, so maybe we can squeeze some more insight out of our friends Tyson Green and Lars Bakken, the stars of the show.
I'm sure it won't be hard for them to want to talk about all the awesome stuff that they're working on, but...
Yeah, I ran to Lars upstairs before we came down, and he was trying to figure out where the line is, and I said, you just figure it out, and we'll fix it all in
there
post,
is no
as
line.
We always do.
Exactly. Exactly. The scalpel of Irk is mighty and precise.
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty cool time, I think, to talk to these two guys specifically, too, because we're hurtling towards our winter build on Friday. I'm not sure if this is going to be the December or the January podcast. I imagine it will be the latter, because we're also coming upon a studio break for the holidays, where we're going to go home and spend some time with our families and probably spend some time with some builds of the game. But we're going to have a winter build. That's a pretty cool moment. It means we're able to stand up the current version of Destiny that we've been working on, the team's been working on. We're all going to play it together. We're going to tell each other what's awesome about it. And more importantly, we're going to say what sucks about it. And then we're going to fix those things next year as we push towards our public beta. And then we're going to get a bunch of similar feedback, I would assume, from our beloved and generous community who would love to graciously help us out and tell us where things are awesome and where things suck.
And we will be listening. You know, the fact that Tyson and Lars both got to talk to Game Informer will make this a good conversation, because they've been able to sort of expand the conversation about Destiny, especially what they're doing for it. You know, how everyone's epic adventure will change the way they look and fight and all the things that we've been speaking in sort of vagaries when we've been getting out in front of the media. So this should be a lot of fun.
You're trying so hard not to let us hear that.
Yeah.
And I heard the whole thing. All the way through. Just pop the top.
I just wanted
the agonizing.
Get it out there. It's like covering up a fart
of the aluminum.
With a cough.
Jeez.
The fart gets worse.
Yeah, I think Tyson specifically was really enthusiastic to get out there and start talking about what he's been working on. I think there's been a lot of sort of question as to what does it mean to have an investment game. Even when we start posting the first job descriptions, people were like, well, what does this mean for this game? I don't understand it. It's something that Bungie doesn't typically do. How do we incorporate that into the game in a cool way? And what does it mean for a player? We say a lot of things in marketing, like it'll change the way you look and fight. And that's really shorthand, you know, for
that's exactly
RPG
how we
elements.
Say it.
Yeah. That's how I hear it in my head when we say it. But these guys are able to go into some details about, you know, the nuts and bolts of it, what it really means for them, what they've built, what they want to get out of it, what their goals are. You know, why the change,
right?
What they hope it brings to bear for players. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how much we can coax out of them in the post-GI world.
It's also interesting to find out, like, how they parry off each other, because I know Tyson wants to do a grand investment system that defines a player, and how Lars has to take that and say, okay, now we have to balance that in a multiplayer universe, and how they have to communicate with each other and fight back and forth about what is what. And you know, I'm always blown away of trying to figure out how they do their job and how they think about things. We're just sitting there playing. It's like, oh, look, it works or it doesn't work. Like, what are you gonna do to fix that?
And it'd be interesting to probe how they work together, right? Mm-hmm. Like, take some, maybe even try to tee up some questions from Tyson and see, or maybe even ask him the same questions and see how they answer them if they're a little bit different, right? And see,
Tyson, how do you listen to Lars?
Well, and just the challenge, just sit and imagine what someone's going to go through, you know, emotionally, mentally, you know, in their imagination as they play a game for months and months and months, and to try to anticipate what they'll want to keep themselves going or how you can change that experience for them over time. I can barely, you know, imagine what I would do over the first week playing Destiny. And these guys can look out, you know, years down the road to try to keep this experience mm-hmm. organic and evolving. So it's a mindset I don't possess.
Yeah. And in the same vein, but in a sort of different direction for Tyson, it's like he makes a new character like with a high frequency, right? He's constantly going through the new user experience and taking it to his end game and redoing that over and over again. Like, how does he stay in the mindset of like, I'm a new player and what does this mean for me? Because mm-hmm. he's so accustomed to the systems and blazing through them. How do you put yourself in the shoes of someone who's never experienced it before and take away all the sort of context and language that you learn through playing it over and over again and really look at it through fresh eyes and make an experience that people are going to fall in love with the first time they play it. So I'm interested in seeing how not only how he does that, but how his role has sort of changed as he's moved, you know, from Halo to Destiny.
Yep.
Yeah. Ton of more things for him to play with in this game. In that case, we can invite him in right now.
Awesome.
Is he waiting
outside? There isn't like a 15-minute buffer. We're going to pretend that he's waiting right outside the door, and then we'll play some beautiful music, and it'll feel like
no time has elapsed, and he
will be in, I'm going to imagine you're going to call it a hot seat.
Yes.
Although today, me and John appear to be in the
cold seats. You have my chair. I have cushions today.
So who's doing this? Who is taking our comfortable chairs and replacing them with metal chairs, Deej?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't own this room, really. I mean, when we look around this room right now, this room is being used. The Foley Lab, there's a whole pile of Bungie noob swords over here on the floor.
Yeah.
Go ahead and make some Foley John. Go ahead.
And what could that be? Oh. What could that be in the world of Destiny?
Hey, John, hand me that script back there on the easel. Let's do a little reading.
Well, this is going to be interesting. This is very dangerous.
What do we got?
We now have pages from the Destiny script.
Oh, shit. I can't say that.
No, you don't say that.
There's a ghost.
Yeah, that's not good. Let's not read that.
Exterior highway. A sweep across the endless plain.
So our first guest on the Bungie podcast is Tyson Green. How you doing?
Not too bad.
We're going to start this off as we always do. I'm going to ask you two questions. First of all, what is your title? And because that's meaningless at Bungie, tell us what that actually means in terms of what you're doing on Destiny.
My title is Lead Investment Designer. I try to make people care about the game.
A lot of people already care about the game a great deal. If they're listening to this, they probably care about the game an enormous deal. So once they get that game in their hands and they're playing that game, how will they recognize your finishing touches?
So stuff that we do on the investment team are the parts of the game that you want to care about that are above and woven through and beneath and just all around the game itself. So you want to care about the game because it's fun. You want to care about the game because it's telling you a good story. But the investment team wants you to care about the game because it gives you things to do, things to want. It gives you things to have a social group work together around. And basically, we just try to pull all the different parts together and really make you want to stick with this game.
Yeah, one of the things that sort of struck me as I've watched people sort of look at the, you know, investment's been sort of a new world word woven into the Bungie experience, right? Like, even when the job descriptions first went up, people were like, huh, what is that? What does that mean? What does that mean for gameplay? I think people just assume what it means is like, oh, what Tyson Green does is like tax on experience points on top of the experience. But what you just said is, I think you actually care about the moment-by-moment gameplay, and you're actually thinking about how what happens when people collide together and how do you make those experiences better and how do you reward people for doing the things that we believe they're going to want to do in-game. And I think he did a really great job in the Game Informer video that released last month in talking about things like the Road to Recon and those sort of really awesome achievements that Miller had put together and the team
There's a really kind of shallow understanding of investment, which is it's just experience points and grinds. But I mean, what investment is really about, it's about caring about the game, right? Like the investment game tries to broaden the spectrum of ways for you to care about the game, things for you to care about in the game. And the goal isn't to, you know, make you want to play the game for 1,000 hours.
Right.
The goal is so that you have this game that you come back to and that your friends come back to. And when you're all coming back to the game and you all feel like you want to keep playing this game, then, you know, you have a social game at that point. You actually have a cooperative experience. You have a communal experience instead of just, you know, the done in one sort of game that you pay $60 and then play the campaign and then put it back on the shelf and never come back to it. But there's lots and lots of different layers here. I mean, you can look at our past games and say, yeah, I mean, we had investment systems in our past games that were based on skill.
Yeah.
Like skill is a form of investment in the game. If you spend 1,000 hours becoming amazingly good at playing Team Slayer on Lockout, that's a form of investment. That's totally valid. That's totally real. If you spend 1,000 hours learning every little nuance about the lore of the Marathon series, that's a form of investment. You have a ton of built-in skill and knowledge about that game that is just as valid to an investment designer as having a couple items or a couple characters that are leveled up to maximum, wearing like really sweet raid gear or rocking some really rare vanity rewards. So yeah, when we talk about investment, again, there's surface level investment, which is things like experience points and like item drops. But then there's deeper layers of investment, like, you know, caring about the lore of the game or caring about something that, you know, an experience that you had with other people.
So when we're out introducing people to this game that might not know it as well as the people on Bungie.net, and we're, you know, talking to people in the media or different communities who have a lot of experience with other games, we paint it in very broad strokes. And we say things like, you know, the more you play, the more dangerous you'll become over time, you know, or the more you play, you'll earn rewards that change the way you look and fight, you know. Are those the sorts of things that you're creating with your systems?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, we look at, if you are a person who's, like, really deeply played this game, who's done some of the hard challenges, or who's just spent a lot of time, you know, covering the breadth of the game, you know, you should be able to look different than other people. You should be able to stand out. You know, when a new friend of yours joins the game, he should look at your character and say, wow, I really want one of those. That's really cool. Where'd you get that? How did you get that? And, you know, instead of you saying to him, oh, yeah, you just complete the campaign, you actually say to him, oh, man, like, me and, like, three other guys, we, like, got together and we, like, really worked on this one thing for a while and we got really good at it. And then eventually, like, you know, this led to that and we put everything together and that's how I got it. It was totally cool. Do you want to work on that?
Yeah, yeah. We talk a lot about, and, you know, players telling stories and the gear and the weapons they have telling stories. And, it, like, I think some people mean that. Like, take that to mean like there's fiction behind it. And there is, like, the fictional team thinks a lot about it. But what we really mean is, like, when you have that epic gun, like the Fate of All Fools, somebody can look at it and go, oh man, like, how did you get that? And either you can tell them, you know, well, yeah, you go and do this thing, or you can go like, hey, you want to form a party? Let's go grab it. Right. Let's go do it. And then you actually create a story out of that moment for a player. And those are super powerful. And we see players do that. Did you just point, like, intrinsically, like guys like the Mythic Tyrant for Halo would go out there and make it his business to beat the game on the hardest mode and the hardest difficulty. And what he would have to show for it was people knew his name, right? They knew his name and they saw his videos. And if they wanted to beat the game, he would, you know, in that same mode, he could take them out and do that. In our game, like, part of your job too is to, like, make sure people know who he is in the game. We, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to create a YouTube channel. He can if he wants to. It's totally his prerogative. Perhaps we won't flag his content and take it down from YouTube.
Danger.
No. But, like, in the game, that will actually show on his, like, you'll see that in his gear. You'll see that, you know, maybe in some other stuff that we haven't talked about when you look at his profile or you inspect him, or maybe even when you look at him on Bungie.net. So, yeah, like, those stories are really cool and really potent.
Yeah. I mean, the Mythic player is a really good example of, hey, once you had a game that people actually care about for whatever reason, well, that gives you, as, you know, that kind of Mythic player, sort of an audience to play to. And there's, you know, another example of this, another game is, you know, you've got all these players who play Dark Souls a lot, and you've got this little tiny slice of those players who, they like playing through Dark Souls on level one characters and beating it. So you've got all these one bros, and why are they doing that? Well, I mean, because there's an audience of people who think that's awesome, mm-hmm. and yep. they're always impressed when, you know, you can do that, and you do it for them, right?
Yeah.
And when you've got a game that people don't care about because it just came and went, well, you don't get that kind of community. That doesn't really build up around those games. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, like, we're not... Investment's not about experience points. It's not about, like, item drops. It's about having an enduring attachment to a game and to a community so that that community can exist and thrive.
Mm-hmm. So how do you take the sort of old world order of a skill-based game, a first-person shooter, a sort of, whatever you want to call it, 30 seconds of fun that, like, I'm a player, I'm really powerful, I have these awesome weapons against enemies, whether they're, you know, AI or human, and then fuse it with an investment game? Does that require, like, a whole lot of new thinking? Does that require you to work with a bunch of the, like, activities guys and the design, the, you know, the other designers, world designers, to figure out, like, holistically how that works? Or is it really something you can sort of layer in, like, icing on a cake?
I mean, you do it really, really carefully, and you start off with a good action game. Like, you can't make a bad action game good by adding investment, and you can make a good action game bad by adding investment mechanisms. So, like, we really have to look at it and say, okay, is the game playing well? Okay, what are the ways that we can add to this experience by saying, you know, good example is breadth versus power. Mm-hmm. You know, if you unlock new abilities and you, like, give people different weapons that are balanced but different, then, like, those are valid rewards that they don't change the game or they don't ruin the game, but they broaden the game. They give people more interesting opportunities. They give people more varied experiences. An investment game is also interesting because you can say, at a given point of time, the game is really firm and balanced because, you know, you're not upsetting that. But over time, you can let parts of that game come and go. You can say, you know, just started. And what does mean? Well, in you've gone and you've said, well, maybe those abilities, they're not really available anymore. Like, those are on old items, things that don't drop anymore. And that creates a new environment. It creates new variety in the experience. It creates new opportunities for skilled players to excel, to change their game. It keeps them from just, you know, settling into a rut and staying there until they get bored of the game and then just leave. And if everyone gets bored of your game and leaves, then you don't have a community anymore. So, yeah, the investment game is really trying to make the action game better by, you know, creating breadth, by creating personalization and, like, personal identity that you can add to a game like that. And then also helping it evolve over time, helping it balance itself and develop.
Yeah. I think one really good example of that for me personally, because I make this all about me all the time, is like at one point the hunter build, the pistol was secondary. And then one day I walked in and it was a primary. And, like, just that one little change was like these huge ripple effects. Now everybody's got this primary and it just absolutely changed the way the sandbox felt. Like, it just ratcheted it up.
Well,
like,
the other change that happened at the same time was, you know, the hand cannon moved from being the special slot to the primary slot. And now a lot of people, not just in gameplay terms, are like, yeah, I really like that hand cannon. I like that look. I like how it characterizes my character. And now I can have a hand cannon primary. Like, I'm not toting around a weapon like some space marine. I'm a goddamn space cowboy with my hand cannon.
Gunslinger.
Yeah, I'm a gunslinger. And that's like part of the awesome thing about, like, using an investment game to help you build up self-identity.
Is that an investment decision or is that a sandbox decision? Like, where do you and someone like Josh Hamrick, who we had previously on a podcast talking about the new three-weapon system, where would you two intersect in a decision like that?
I mean, that would be a combination of a lot of things, right? I mean, that particular one is, you know, us saying, hey, Josh, you know, what if we shifted this weapon out of the heavy category, like we shifted the sniper rifle from the heavy category where we didn't really feel like that was working into the special category where it gets a lot more play. Well, now do we have a special category that's got four items in it instead of three? Well, maybe it's more interesting if we move that up to the primary, because what was the hand cannon really bringing to the special category? It was sort of like a, you know, a longer range shotgun in a lot of ways with a precision.
Or element. A shorter range marksman rifle.
Yeah. Right. It existed in this weird space. So, I mean, a lot of that did come from the sandbox guys. They wanted to make that change so they can dial in the balance of those weapons. And investment said, well, cool. I mean, that's good for us too, because that broadens the scope of the primary slot, which is really important.
Yep.
And it makes the secondary slot really interesting. And even though it reduced the scope of the heavy slot, that wasn't a bad thing, because that meant that those two weapons could really be much stronger and really stand apart and really be more of the fantasy of like a rampage weapon.
A true heavy, right? Like you're lugging it around. It's just going to do epic damage. Yeah.
So how do you focus when it comes to, you talk about all this breadth of different things, like, What is the thought process of how to balance that in a this kind of shared world and make it so that everyone, while I may be better than Urk and I'm clearly better than Deej, how do we play together and have fun? Like, what is the challenge involved in something like that?
Sage characterizes balance not as everybody's equal, but rather that not everybody is doing exactly the same thing.
Mm.
Because if everybody's doing exactly the same thing, then something is not balanced. Everybody is trying to pursue the same unbalanced thing.
Interesting.
But so, I mean, the way that we look at the balance of the investment game is we say, well, is this driving people to do different things and try different things and like explore different directions of using the sandbox and using the game?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it driving people to do exactly the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we see the latter, we say, well, okay, well, is that, what's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to fix that? So part of it is, part of the difficulty of the process is you just have to let the game mature and develop and then ride with it. It's really kind of, it's kind of like riding the bear. I mean, you just need to,
Is that Sage? Is that
her?
Quite an image.
Yeah. I could see Harold doing that.
Jeez. It's a fascinating point, though.
Harold wouldn't be riding the bear so much as like wrestling with it and or shooting it.
Yeah.
So.
And at the end, there's a shot of both of them having brandy, and it's like, clink.
Choking it with his bare hands. It's interesting to make the point that you guys feel like you have failed if everyone has the same favorite weapon. Mm. And obviously, with the huge arsenal that we have in Destiny, we don't want that to happen. We want people to really have the feeling that my weapon is unique. I am unique. The way I use my weapon is unique. As you've moved, I mean, you've been with Bungie for a long time. Yeah. Ever since I have been aware of Bungie, I've been watching you in the Vidox wearing your hallmark boonie hat and, you know, just talking about big game ideas and stuff. Yeah. A gamer whose feedback I relish, you know, I said just the other day after your Game Informer piece, this guy should be in every single Vidoc. I love the way he talks about games. As you're moving into this Destiny play space and dealing with these new elements, like, what is the biggest change over the years in terms of your approach to games and the way you're designing games?
I think a big part of it would be like really explicitly thinking about, you know, where's this game going to be 6 months after it comes out? Like really thinking about the long game and making sure that we're not making decisions right now that are just going to make us regret, you know, make us hate past Tyson. Like we're not building a game just to ship. We're not building a game just for the launch window. We're building a game for the launch year. And that's sort of a big shift. That's a shift not just for us, but it's also a shift for the studio, where the entire studio realizes that and supports it. You know, there's less of the, you know, we build a game and then the whole studio pivots and starts working on the next game. And then there's a relatively small group of people who hang in there and are trying to fix and, you know, patch and maintain the previous game. So that's a big change. I think we have an evolving understanding of the thing I was talking about earlier, which is balance. In the past, you might have characterized our idea of successful balance as we got it to the point where we could drop it and it would be perfect and nobody had to touch it anymore and it would just be a shining gem for all time. And, you know, that's something that a lot of game designers, I think, aspire to. They want to say, you know, I made the most perfectly balanced game ever. It's just beautiful. Never have to touch it again.
It's called Counter-Strike, right?
It's called chess. But the problem is, you know, those games, they don't hold a community the same way that an evolving living game like League of Legends or Dota 2 or, you know, games like that. Those games can build these amazing communities around them, and tons of excitement about every part of that game just comes from the fact that it's changing, it's evolving. Like there's a meta game that develops over time, and the thing that was awesome before is not so awesome now. And the thing that you didn't think about before is all of a sudden like the best idea you ever had. And that kind of that kind of dynamic balance where the game is ebbing and flowing and like changing and circulating. I think we understand that and want more of that now. Like we want to build a game which is exciting and entertaining always, and not just exciting and entertaining because it achieved a singularity point.
You bring up an interesting point too, because a lot of games will ship and then there's, you know, nothing that comes up after it. And I'm curious for my own, whether this makes it into the cut, is like, are we prepared to say like, hey, these new things are rolling out, there's new investment things, there's new items, there's new progression trees or whatever have you, to just, I just load up the game and bam, there's all of a sudden like, you know, there's a nag that tells me the world has changed or whatever, and then I get to go in and experience these new progression things.
Yeah. We want to commit to supporting the game as it's going, and I think part of that means the investment game wants to be ongoing. We want to support the investment game. So yeah, I think we look at like 1,000-hour grinds and say, oh God, don't do anything like that. That's terrible. And instead we say, yeah, like let's make the game satisfying and punchy and rewarding and then support it. Like keep working on that game, keep making it good.
And by taking in feedback from community
there's almost no avoiding that. Like if you don't
they'll let you know.
If you don't take feedback, they will give it to you.
I will find you.
I think that is new stuff, right? Like a lot of time you could, you know, in the past, and you could argue like CE was like that in your metaphor of like the perfect game. It got to a point where people just played that thing. It endured. People still play it, right?
Oh, yeah.
They just play and play and play. And there's people that have gotten amazingly good at it. And it's a really rewarding experience in its own right. It's a great game. But had we been able to go back, had the studio had the foresight back then to think about how can we like add new maps and new destinations to go to and keep the story rolling inside of that context and find ways to tweak and mess with the investment game and keep people coming back. Like now when you're on Gulch, it's a little bit different. And the Warthog, there's a new Warthog variant, and like the way that would shake things up and make that world feel really dynamic and alive
This thing happened not too long ago with when Halo 3 was made free. There's this like huge uptick in interest where all these people are like, oh my God, like everyone go to Xbox Live on this particular day and we're going to play Halo 3. It's just like old times, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about that was so kind of sad was, why should it be just like old times?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't it be just like whenever? Because that game is still vital and viable because there's a thriving community around it. Mm-hmm. Like, why do games have to get old and die? Right? Like that's
Old Yeller. You have to put him out the pasture.
It's been designed into those games. So
as much as you're talking about sort of deliberately sustaining, deliberately leaving breadcrumbs for the gamers to, you know, have their best experience through the game, I enjoy the fact that you say that it's not going to be a grind, because I have played games, to your point before, where they take a great action game and they make it not as good with the inclusion of investment. I've played games where I say to myself, why am I using this gun? I don't want to use this gun.
Yeah.
I'm using this gun because I have to use this gun to get that gun.
Yeah.
Yep. I am playing this game in a way that I do not choose, I do not support, I do not think is smart, but I'm like force feeding myself this fucking cauliflower so that I can have this cinnamon roll later on.
Well, I mean, there's even another example of that, without naming the franchise, there's a recent game that I played a lot of, and I'd played the prequel to it. So there was a major difference between those two games, where in the first one, they had a fairly punchy progression where, you know, you could have a character who is up and running and functional in, you know, a night's worth of play, or, you know, a solid weekend of like binging with your friends. And that was really fun. It was really satisfying and punchy. You could like try a lot of different things in a really short period of time. And then the sequel came out quite a long time later, and we all rushed back to the sequel. We're really excited about it, and only to discover that it took about 50 or 60 hours to level up a character in that game, and it really sort of, it was a very, very different experience just because the time scale, like you, just changing the time scale from a, you know, something you felt like you could do in a weekend to something that you felt like, you know, you had to kind of commit for a week or two or three. And in a lot of ways, it greatly diminished that game. We on the other end of the spectrum, we look at MOBAs like Dota and League of Legends, and we say, well, these are pretty remarkable because they take an investment game and they compress it down to about 30 minutes.
Yep.
Like you, every single game of Dota is like this little miniature investment game where you've decided, I'm going to roll a new character and I'm going to level that character up and I'm going to get some cool gear for that character. And then I'm going to use that character and that character was great. Or, oh, that character sucked. I'm going to do them differently next time.
Yep.
And I mean, that's a fascinating form of an investment game right there. And I don't think people would look at that and say, you know, Dota is an investment game.
Like, right.
No, that's not what they think about at all. They think about investment games like 1,000-hour grinds and, you know, sparkle ponies and stuff like that.
So how do you manage those two things, like the desire to have a very short, punchy, sort of cyclical, you know, rewarding investment game with the sort of long-term goals we talked about earlier, the things that are much more in line with, like, the Road to Recon or Mythic Tyrant-style stuff? Like, how do those two worlds collide?
Do they? I don't think they collide at all. They're just two different wavelengths in the same game, right? Like you can have a tight investment game. Like you find a new weapon and that new weapon is interesting when you start off with it and you look at it and you think, how can I upgrade this? And then you use that weapon for a couple of encounters and you say, oh, this is really kind of interesting. I'm going to take this one all the way. And, you know, you finish upgrading that weapon and that might only take, you know, an hour or two of play, like, you know, an evening session, a bunch of PvP matches. But then you might have a long cycle progression where you're working on, you know, saving up for a new ground vehicle, right? Like a new one with, you know, fucking cool blue contrails. Oh, can I swear on?
Sure.
You can fucking swear.
Yeah, you can fucking swear all the way.
That's awesome.
Fucking blue.
Too fucking much.
Marty doesn't listen at all.
But the point is you can have short cycles and you can have long cycles, and cycles is really it, right? I mean, you said it already. It's you want to introduce cycles of play, cycles of activity, and you know, our most famous design axiom at Bungie, the one that gets the most press, is 30 seconds of fun, right?
Yep.
And I think that's famous because it's true and it's a really useful design axiom to use, but that's not the only cycle. I mean, you have cycles everywhere from down on seconds where you're getting good feedback from your weapon as you like fire a single bullet and like hear the sound it makes and see the impact it has on the target, all the way up to very long cycles where you're saying, you know, what am I doing this week? You know, I'm gonna get together with my friends for Thursday night firefight, and you know, this weekend we're gonna work on a couple of challenges, and like, you want to cover those whole bands. And what an investment game brings to the table is it also says, what if you had some even longer cycles, the kinds of cycles that involve, you know, that make it worthwhile to, you know, form a clan, to, you know, have friends that you're playing with in a community. And Those sorts of things I don't think they're in conflict at all. They're synergistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as somebody who formed clans to play games that, you know, didn't have clan support, that's the intrinsic motivation again. You know, that's the intrinsic investment. When the community gets together and they do things to enhance each other's experience that have really nothing to do with what the developer, well, it has everything to do with what the developer created, but they take their own cue and they make their own action. What you're doing doesn't get in the way with that. If people still want to be like the speedrun king, if people still want to, like, you know, go off and find their own ways to enjoy this universe, they can. But you will, for the less inventive players, say, here are some breadcrumb trails between you and your future greatness.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even characterize them as less inventive in a lot of cases. Sometimes they're players who don't even know that they really hunger for this kind of thing until they taste it for the first time. We're going into an interesting space where we're a shooter, we're an action game, we're a game that a lot of people out there are really familiar with and they love and they spend a lot of time playing. And we're trying to bring some additional elements to that I think we've always been really good at, where we say, you know, this is a game that's more fun playing with friends. You look at Halo 2, right? Like Halo 2 took Halo 1 and said, hey, what if you could like have that experience that you had clustered around a TV with your friends in the basement? And what if you could have that anytime you wanted with like a virtual sofa of friends? Like the friends list came from Halo 2, right? We have always liked these sort of games where you play with your friends and you play socially. And the best outcome is if our game introduces you to that, even if you didn't know that you liked that sort of thing, and then you find out you love it, and then all of a sudden your play experience has just been like enormously broadened. And I mean, there's a lot of people who know that they don't like that sort of thing. That's pretty common. Like, and I mean, the game is great for those people too, because there's a lot of content to it. But I mean, I think we're saying, yeah, we want you to be able to play this game with your friends. And if you don't have friends to play with, then we got you covered. We'll
find you some.
We'll find you some.
Yeah.
We got all these couches over here.
Yeah, exactly. I have to say, you know, when you talk about Halo 2 and introducing someone to those different, you know, forms of social interaction, I knew I liked that stuff. I came into Halo 2 saying, you know, campaign is training for multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
But Halo 2 made me truly love it to the point where, what am I doing? I'm starting a blog, I'm starting a website, I'm building teams to play this game. When my team gets full, I'm building other teams to play this game, to the point where, I mean, that's why I work here. You know, so the systems that you've been designing, the way you change the way gamers think about games and play games is, you know, why you and I are talking to each other in front of God and the internet right now.
I mean,
so that stuff is compelling. I'm thinking, I think I might.
That's why I work here too.
Can I put my arm around you?
you look at back in, back when I started, like, having regular contact with Bungie was in the Myth days. And that was very much back when, you know, Bungie built this little tiny community of, you know, maybe a couple hundred people playing online at any given time, playing this, frankly, kind of obscure real-time tactical game. Mm-hmm. And that whole experience of, like, being part of that community that developed up around that game is what eventually brought me into, you know, direct contact with people at Bungie, you know, coming down and doing an internship for a couple months, and then, you know, starting
Isn't that also the same experience that brought, like, Butcher?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Christopher Barrett.
You know,
David Candlin.
Butcher, you. Barry, yeah. A lot of people.
Eric Osborne.
Oh, yeah. I didn't play Myth. I am wearing a Ted Leader t-shirt.
Excellent. Podcast exclusive.
We already had that.
There's going to be a lot of exclusives in the podcast.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, I think Tyson dropped about 4 or 5 exclusives there. We'll see if they make the cut or if I have to do a little bit of...
Just cut out the ones that you can't talk about.
Maybe I'll bleep some of them. People wonder what in the world we're talking about.
It'll be an awesome, like, 15-second long beep, beep,
beep, like, when you hear the fallen captain growl, there was something sweet as hell behind that. Yeah. Well, before you violate our fresh sheet anymore, I guess we'll just say that it's been a pleasure playing your games. It's been a pleasure talking to you about your games. You said that one of our most, quoted design pillars is the whole 30 seconds of fun thing. But also, you know, we like to say a lot that we make games we like to play. And it's interesting to hear you talk about the games that you like to play and to hear that Destiny is one of them. So thanks for sharing that context.
Yeah, I think... maybe even a little tail out, maybe an extra bonus question. We got the winter build coming up on Friday. I know you put a lot of work into that, and the team's been bleeding for that thing to stand the game up and get it into a state where the whole studio can jump in and tell everybody what they think is great about it and what they think is absolutely terrible about it, so you can continue working through 2014. Like, what are you most looking forward to about that build?
Taking a week off.
The aftermath.
Yeah. Fair enough.
You only get 1 week? I thought the studio was closed for 2 weeks, Tyson.
No. The studio's closed. That doesn't mean anything.
All right. Not when you're a team lead.
Yeah.
Well, again, thanks for your hard work and thanks for talking to us all about it.
All right.
Thanks, Tyson.
Thanks.
Pleasure.
Here comes the Marty music. So for the second segment of the podcast, we're joined in the hot seat by Lars Bakken. I got two questions for you.
Oh, boy.
What's your title? No one cares. And what does that mean to Destiny?
I am a lead designer on the project, and I am in charge of the competitive multiplayer activity. So that means...
we know what that means.
Yeah. So you probably know what that means for our listeners. It means anytime you go in and... fight against other human beings. I am in charge of that experience.
So multiplayer is back to Bungie.
It is, yeah.
I thought you were actually going to start in with your job title by telling us you were really excited to talk about your job title. But weren't quite ready.
No, I was actually going to say I'm not quite ready to talk about that yet, my job title. But yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to pivot. You don't have to dodge. It's just us.
I know.
If you say anything bad, we're just going to edit it, or we might maybe, you know, we might bleep it out with like a fallen captain roar or something.
Nice.
Who knows what could happen.
That's good.
It'll be a really cruddy, like generic bleep. I'm not doing Captain Roars or anything like that.
No.
It's got to go through audio.
He's been promising that all podcast.
You have to come through on that.
Nope, not doing it.
Just get Elliot to go roar.
Whenever I promise that, just bleep that out with the same thing. No. Sorry. Anyway.
So we're fresh off your 2013 close with your Game Informer piece.
Yeah.
It was built pretty good to get out there and divulge some details.
Yeah, we sort of were, you know, we went at a really high level and there were obviously a bunch of things we weren't ready to talk about. Yeah. But the frustrating part about doing interviews early on too, when stuff's not locked down, is you get, you know, you don't want to say something that's going to paint you into a corner. And,
yep.
So that's always tough, but, I'm anxious. So anxious to talk about the real stuff. Cause we've got a lot of really cool things we're doing in Destiny.
Yeah. And we actually did, stand up a bunch of different experiences for Game Informer and Let 'Em Play, which was very nerve-wracking for a lot of people.
Yeah,
we actually talked to them today on their podcast, which today is December, and this podcast will go live in January. So we talked to them last month about that kind of thing and how nervous it makes everybody, but it seemed to go pretty well.
Yeah.
Seemed to enjoy it.
They seemed to like the game a lot. I think the first day and a half, you know, they were holding their cards close to their chest, and sort of at the very end, they were like, oh my God, this is so cool. So fucking cool. Like what you guys are doing. And I was like, oh, I feel so, relieved.
Yeah. We talked about that. It's weird to be in a place where you can finally start saying some concrete things, even though we can't talk about everything. It's like for a lot of the team, it's been like quiet for a really long time. The things they've been working on have not been exposed to people. We have been at a pretty high level, and to have that little kind of like mode change of like, actually, we're going to let people play the thing. Oh shit. And they're going to go out and tell people what it is. Oh shit.
Yep.
And hope they say good things. And so,
oh shit.
So far, so good. So we just had Tyson in here and we kind of closed his segment off by talking about the winter build.
Yeah.
And what he was looking forward to in that, sort of switching gears from external to internal.
Yeah,
like, what are you excited to see people do and play?
I'm really excited to see how the story missions are coming together. They've made a lot of progress recently, and I just played. So last night I stayed late and was looking at the winter build, and man, some of the experiences. And I, don't ever let Marty hear this, but hearing his music in the new, in the game makes it like so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And so having those experiences start to come together, the audio sort of coming in, the encounters starting to get whipped into shape, like the missions making sense, the fiction pieces flowing, like it's so cool. Because I play my stuff all the time. Like I know what we're going to get into with the winter build, and I apologize ahead of time if I come off a little hoarse because I just played for an hour of multiplayer and I was screaming my head off because
it's a good sign.
It was a very good sign. Like anytime I come out of that room and my voice is a little like, oh, that's awesome. That's like that's the sign that the game is coming together, and I feel really good about where we're at.
Sweet. Yeah, I can't wait to play it. I've been salivating over Friday for a while. Yeah. So if the podcast is delayed, it doesn't make holiday, suck it. I was playing Destiny.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yeah. That is the fun thing. I've been up there a couple times playing with you guys, and I think the last time I was up there, like Jones was up there and Barry's up there and Alice is up there, and I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and play in the corner and just be quiet, and then like all of a sudden I'm like, I can't. I'm like, oh God, I'm gonna kill you. It's just like you get excited about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, Carol's on the other side, turns around and we both snipe each other or whatever, and we just turn around and we're just looking at each other like you get that. It's fun.
So we brought the Game Informer guys up into the lab and we were setting up PvP, and before everybody walked in, I was like the reverse pep talk with people. I was like, okay, look, you guys have been playing this thing for a long time. You're really good at it. Don't throw down and just make it really obvious that you're not playing, but be cognizant that they're getting their bearings for the first few minutes, whoever takes first, we're going to fire you. We're going to have some sort of punishment. And then Luke Smith, who was busy, comes in last minute, and we have this ongoing thing that's, back to Halo 3, and he hasn't gotten the message. And in the first, 5 minutes of the game, he's taunting the shit out of me. Oh, get the fuck out of here, And this is like, okay.
That was the best part. Before it started, you said, you're fucking fired, whoever's in first place. And the game ends, and it's Irk in first place. And I just tap him
with
on the shoulder.
Too,
I'm
like,
dude.
Like, a zillion points.
Yeah, and hopefully it's not any sort of, magic knowledge to anyone. But when people come in to play for the first time, we can't unleash our full force on them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, it's like getting stomped by a 50 the first time you played the game. You'd be so frustrated.
It's like going back and playing Halo 3 when they made it free, right? And you haven't played for a year. You're just like, oh, yeah, I'm totally a 40. And then you go into the matchmaking. It's like,
you're
40 means something very different now, right?
Or anytime you play like an old game, you're like, hey, let's have a throwback night and play that game that we loved so much a couple years ago. And you're like, there are people who are still here.
This is their life.
They never left.
They never left.
Hello, I've been waiting for you.
You guys,
even sitting in matchmaking for a day.
Remember when we used to be the spider? Guys, I think we're the fly.
So campaign, shaping up.
Yeah.
Competitive multiplayer.
Shaping up really nicely. The other thing that I played over the weekend, one Luke Smith, is, I mean, we're talking about that a little bit, right, at a high level.
You can say it, sure.
Yeah, the raid stuff. I just... I was very impressed, impressed. Like, I think he held it really secret for a long time. Like, you know, they've been testing it a ton themselves, but he wants to keep it really close to his chest. And that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, it adds something to the game that when I play all the different activities now, I actually, like, I've been saying it for a while, but, you know, the whole activity for every mood mantra that we've been banging on, but now actually playing all these things, man, holy shit, is it good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you would hate this segment of the podcast, but I mean, I told so many people about that weekend experience. I was going around just like not even selling it, just like celebrating, like it just feels so like refreshing and inventive.
It's so different.
And, like different. Yeah, there's just so many experiences in there. And I was trying to figure out like an analog of I smashed a bunch of different games together and came up with something, but it's just so fun to play. And there was these moments where you're like, I mean, I don't even want to get into the details of it, but you're just like looking, you're just looking at the game and going, how in the fuck are we going to do this? And then like an hour later, you're like that, right? And it's just like so awesome and so different and so unique.
Well, we'll have a team meeting before the winter build starts getting played, and he's going to get up in front of everybody, and for the first time in like over a year, he's going to like dress the studio and say, this is what I've been working on. Go play the game. You know, he's proud of it. He's excited about it, which is, you know, great to see. But this is about you. This is your hour. This is your time
to
shine.
He's this guy. It's his job to sell it all.
I know.
So in terms of competitive multiplayer, as we move into the world of Destiny, there's a lot more to play with. And a lot of the people who have sort of consumed the new story coming out of Game Informer, you know, there's a broader conversation happening about competitive multiplayer. You know, they're talking about a game with higher lethality, a more diverse sandbox, more different ways to fight and to kill your friends or people that you've never met.
An investment game.
An investment game to, you know, sort of wrap all around that. You know, Tyson was talking a lot about balance. How would you describe what is different for you as a designer tackling the competitive multiplayer sandbox, you know, building that arena? What should fans expect from Destiny?
So I think the first thing that they're going to notice is that it, you know, we're not making Halo again. And that should be really exciting for people. I know. I mean, it's hard, right? But Destiny is a different game and we're making a different game. And, you know, the combat sandbox is pretty different. Like, I think, you know, the way it feels and the way you move it's going to be reminiscent of Halo, but, you know, the new things we have in there, like the vertical movement modes and all the different types of grenades and all the choices you're making on your focus or your build, it makes the game feel really different. And you run across guys that you go, wow, I don't really understand what that guy's doing right now, but that is really cool. And you have your own, you know, set of those tools that you use against the other people that you run into as well. And the player verbs that we have now, I feel like it's a lot deeper than what we had in Halo. So the game feels a lot more strategic in a way where you can sort of understand your build and go in and sort of attack a situation in a very different way depending on, you know, where you're at in the map and what your mood is and what the game type is that you're playing.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with the, you know, like looking at it from a high level or even just like on paper before you play, it would seem like, oh man, this is going to be really complex. There's all these new sort of, like you said, verbs or there's all these sort of weapons that people can pick up and abilities they can pick up. And you're like, man, this could be chaotic and really confusing, but it's surprising me how still simple it really feels, right? How easy it really is to slip into it and pick those things up. You really quickly learn that like yeah, Hamrick's playing a hunter, and what that means is he's going to be on the peripheral, and he is going to pounce. Like, he's going to hit you from long range, and he's going to land all his shots. So if I want to be successful against him, one, I should not be out in the open, and two, I should close with short-range stuff, right? And I should think about how I can outsmart him that way. Probably still not going to outsmart him. He's still pretty good at close range. But you sort of learn, you sort of learn these, you know, these sort of play patterns that people have, and you see the abilities that they're bringing to bear, and it says something about how they're going to play compared to somebody like a David Hurd, who's always going to be a Titan. He's always going to have short range stuff.
And he's going to run in and try and smash you.
He's
going
to run and try and smash you, or he's going to wait for you to run in, make an ill-advised move, and he's going to make you pay for that. And you sort of learn all these cool little wrinkles of the game, and it sort of builds on this. It is more complex, but it retains that simplicity and that clarity of combat that I think the studio's been known for. That, you know, it's stupid to say, but it's like, you know, easy to slip into, difficult to master, right?
Absolutely.
There's this, like, I can play, I can be competent. If I'm a skillful player, I'm going to win. I'm going to win more encounters than I lose.
Absolutely.
And then the longer I play, the more nuance and the more, you know, shades of gameplay I'm going to see, the more abilities I'm going to unlock, the more movement modes I'm going to be able to understand. And something like, you know, I might decide to rock something like Blink instead of Double Jump because it's a little bit harder to use, but it's also a little bit more effective against someone in an offensive situation versus a movement mode, right? I think all that stuff's pretty cool and pretty fun to play around with.
So skill is still requisite to victory.
Oh my God. Yeah. Skill is very important. It's not just, you know, it's not just your thumb skill. It's understanding, you know, how you're outfitting yourself, what weapons you're taking, what choices you've made in your build. And then understanding how to use that properly. So, you know, getting around the map is different depending on what vertical movement mode you chose. And there are multiple ways into each of the sort of, you know, more powerful positions on the map. Like, you want to hold powerful positions on the map. There are, there is one game type in particular that, that makes that really obvious, and we sort of call it out to you. And that's really fun, right? And being able to control those places and understanding, hey, if the, you know, I can look left and right and there's a door to my right, there's a staircase coming up to my left, and then straight ahead, there's this hole blown in the wall. And I know there's three ways people can come in. And so then you, you know, the game becomes, it's still predictable, but there's all this depth in terms of, like, is the guy going to come up the stairs? Is he coming through the doorway? Is he going to jump through, like, using glide through the hole that's blown in the wall? Then what's he going to use at that point? You know, do I want to plant my prox grenade on the ground so he lands directly on it? You know, do I want to, like, hide in the corner? Do I want to sprint towards him and melee him in the face? You know,
run
do
away
I
from
want...
his arc blade?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, it's really cool. There's such a surprising amount of depth to each encounter. It's really fun. And Deej, to speak to what you said, there's absolutely a ton of skill, and we found that the guys who've been playing for a while are, you know, vastly able to outstrip other people pretty pretty handily.
Well, but to talk on that, it's not even about, like, the other players have better characters or anything like that. It's just, like, understanding. It's like with any game too. It's like you understand the map better. You understand, like, we have a, there's a, like, I remember playing Pentathlon last year, and the testers just crushed us. Just demolished us. And I'm
I was on that team, by the way.
I thought I could, like, just, I'm like, oh, just, I'm just going to pick it up and play it and I'll be fine. And it was like, wow, I was getting, I'm like, where am I getting shot from? Like,
it's almost as if they play the game for a living.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that showed, right?
Yeah.
You know, that shows. And so I was like, you know, fuck it, I'm going to play more. And so I started playing Tuesday with Thursdays and just starting to learn the maps more and getting better. And, like, you know, that also, you know, propagates through who I play against and how I play against them.
Yeah, I found like for Halo and most multiplayer games, I'm really streaky. Like, I usually have really bad games and then really good games. And I think, I don't know if it's because of a attention span thing or what's going on or the people that I'm playing with, but I find I'm a lot more even in Destiny. I think it's because I've got these sort of, like, I have reasons to live and stay alive. And so I'm constantly not just thinking about, I need to put shots on a guy. I need to run really fast through the map, find a guy, put shots on him. I'm thinking about, like, well, if I do that, I'm probably going to die. And then I'm feeding them supers, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to be really smart about how I approach a situation. I have to think about the weapon set that I'm bringing in and play to my preferred play style. I'm going to work the edges a little bit. I'm going to run for cover when I start taking shots. I'm going to try to lure people into a little trap, right? Yeah. I'm going to be chaotic. Those things always work for me. And I found myself, you know, adhering to my strategy a lot more often and being a lot more attentive in the game because of the systems that are driving me to, like, I want to stay alive for longer. That's how I'm going to get these supers, and that's how I'm going to unleash fury on people. And if I die and my team's just throwing themselves at the thing because they're, like, for whatever reason, right, because they're just, like, not smart or they're just throwing, like, all that's going to do is, like, accelerate our loss, right? So you got to think about, like, where you're positioned on the map, what your teamwork looks like, what builds you have in place. Do I have a hand cannon? Well, now I'm going to be a little bit you know, work more from the edges? Do I have an auto? Now I've got to think about closing the gap and outsmarting somebody in their position or flanking them. So I found those things which all happen in Halo. But for me, anyways, I'm more like sort of rooted in the moment. I'm able to focus because those things exist, because they're compelling me to think about like my lifespan in a different way.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about, it goes deeper than just skill. You know, when people say I'm skilled at this game, like you said, you know, they're thumb skills.
Yeah.
You know, I'm good at wielding my weapon. I'm good at moving my character around. But when you start talking about jumping through a window and deciding which ability to use and how is that guy going to counter that, we almost kind of get more into a discussion about tactics.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, what would you say to a player that says that, you know, they like a game that blends skill and tactics and those concerns?
I think we have a lot going for us in that realm. And I'll go back to the builds. It's your outfitted character minus your weapons and whatever armor you have set up. So you have a bunch of abilities that you're choosing. And when you're choosing those abilities, you know, you might not be thinking about what tactics you're going to use to employ those. But when you decide to take something like the Arc Prox, which is probably my favorite grenade in the game right now, it's a proximity mine that attaches to any surface and then perpendicularly juts out like an electrical damage four separate times. And it's really fun to use as a trap. Like, you don't necessarily expect to get kills with that grenade, but you can use it when you're defending an area to say, like, I'm going to close this door right now.
Yeah.
I'm throwing an arc prox in the area. That guy cannot go through. If he does, he's going to take a bunch of damage. And then I can either use that to flank around to come, you know, to his side and kill him or force him to go a different way. And that feels really
like
awesome.
Area denial.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I remember when those grenades first came on, I was playing the Warlock and like the Axiom Bolt came on. And it was just this great, wonderful thing where I've
screwed so many people over with that thing. Like, everyone's like, how many Nova Bombs does Urk have? This is Axiom Bolt.
That's an Axiom Bolt. It's different. Like, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you can sort of predict the route that they might come in, throw that down, make them take a different route, and then hit them with the bomb, and you're like, suck it.
And that's where map design comes in, and it's super important. You know, you make sure that one of the hardest things we found early on was making sure we could make the maps predictable, even with movement modes. And I feel like we've gotten to a really good place now where once you understand the maps and you understand how the movement modes work, you can force people into doing different things, and they can force you into doing different things, and the game is still like highly predictable if you understand the systems, and that's what goes back to the skill conversation we were talking about earlier.
And there's a lot more to it than I think that anyone's going to be expecting, and that's what makes it a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's as satisfying to like connect with the super as it is to make someone miss one.
Oh yeah,
that feels really good.
I actually this thing that made Josh Hamrick, if you've ever heard Josh in a playtest lab, he screams like a girl. Sorry, Josh.
Yeah,
it's
true.
You'll even admit it yourself.
Yelps.
I have this ability on the Titan that I was just playing where I can sprint and then do a shoulder rush and kill dudes, but they see you coming a mile away and it's, you know, you can counter it if you know what you're doing, but I'm shoulder charging towards Josh. He doesn't see me. He snaps Golden Gun on, turns towards me at the last second. I shoulder charge him right in the face, and it was so awesome. Like, he just screamed like a girl, and I just went, yeah! And it was so cool. And things like that happen, you know, all the time in our game. Like, you don't expect it, and this thing comes out of nowhere. Like, someone is in superpower mode, and you still can like shut them down, and it feels so good.
Yeah, right when everything sort of came online, and all the sandbox and everything started hitting the builds. I remember John and I had that conversation of like, there's just so many epic moments that happen in a multiplayer match now that just feel like really great narrative pieces. Yeah. Like these hero moments where somebody on your team or you guys combine tactics, you know, where you have two people like defending a space and you see somebody come in and like start peppering them out, throw a, you know, Axiom Bolt, and then somebody's waiting when the people get driven out of the back corner with a Fist of Havoc, and it's just like, oh my God, that was so perfect, you know, and it just like feels so good. And those little moments in the game right now feel really exciting.
And what's surprising is that they're still resonating. So I remember like playing in a, it was like last year or something like that, we were playing on a map where you had drawn everyone's attention. I dropped in from above, Golden Gun, fry, fry, fry. And then it was like, yes. And I got like Fist of Havoc, and then you came in with your, you know, Nova Bomb and just cleaned it out. And it was like this layered effect of just amazingness happening in this one little play space.
When we've gotten stuck multiple times in not competitive multiplayer, but like public spaces with that thing happening where like you're feeding each other and you're like, wait, we're supposed to be doing a mission right now, but it's like half an hour in and you're just like, this is so much fun.
What should we be
the
doing?
The Vex in the Fallen are fighting here and we're just mopping them up. Yep. It's just like you keep looking back and like, okay, waypoint, and you'll start running towards it and you'll hear like a Nova bomb go off and you're like, God damn it.
Like, come on,
back
keep
at
up.
It.
Yeah.
Keep up.
Yep. There's orbs on the ground. Get them.
Yeah. I think this conversation has this really interesting running theme too, where it's like, I'm awesome, but you can counter me. Mm-hmm. You're awesome, but he can counter you. You know, and that really feeds into something that we were talking to Tyson about, which I found fascinating. I thought it was a conversation we should have with you as well, which is about balance.
Yeah.
Now that word is kind of a third rail because it's one of these terms that a lot of people who play games will use to indicate that they don't like something. You know, this must be imbalanced because I'm losing.
Right.
This game is not balanced because I don't know how to win or someone is better than me. But
That's latency.
Latency. It's imbalanced. It's broken. Yeah. It's overpowered. You know, there are all these words that kind of get, you know, we kind of get beat over the head with when people give us feedback. And we love feedback and we want feedback. So when you think about balance, anybody who listens to this podcast that wants to invoke the word balance on our forum to complain about, you know, something that they think should be changed, what should they know about how we think about balance at Bungie?
Sure. I mean, we definitely believe that something can be powerful as long as there is a way to deal with it. If, you know, something can be super effective in one realm, whether that's a small realm or more general realm, but as long as there is a way to get around that or counter it in some way, I feel like that balance, that's a hard balance to strike, but that's something, that's the reason why we play the game every single day, because we are constantly looking at these things and making sure there's not one thing that's so extremely powerful that no one's ever going to be able to deal with. But the best thing now where we're at, I feel, is that we're getting to the point where someone will say something like, hunters are so overpowered, and you know, like I just sit there and silently nod, and then someone else will go, yeah, but warlocks are insane right now. And then someone else will go, yeah, but titans are, you know, and this conversation happens and everyone believes they're right. And everyone sort of is right because they're all powerful in their own respects. And it's really cool to see all those things bashing into each other. Yeah. But really, like we pay close attention to make sure there's not something that's so vastly overpowered that sort of crosses the boundary. Like if titans are really good at in close, but they also have this ability that allows them to kill things like in a super long distance as well, like we have to wonder, does that make sense? Because it almost doesn't make sense for the Titan anymore. And it might be crossing the boundary into being too good in too many situations.
And you can already see it coming. Like on day one of Destiny, I'm going to call it right now, if we were to take a poll, if we were to take a census, and we totally can.
Oh, yeah.
I bet you just because of the way some of our marketing is spun out and where our community's heads and, you know, hearts and minds are at right now, it's going to be like 75% Hunter just because, you know, that cape, that golden gun, you know, it plays so well in our marketing. Yep. You know, we've had so many hero shots of the Hunter. Everybody's like, I'm going to be an Exo Hunter.
Yeah.
Grim Brother One. And, you know, but it's like, I'm always telling people like, dudes, Warlock is a fun way to play too. You know, I'm like trying to remind them, like there are three classes in this game. Give them all a, you know, test, give them all a checkout because, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that vacillates.
Oh, yeah. And it'll change over time, right? People will get used to one thing and say it's overpowered. And then, you know, we fully anticipate this. Someone else will figure out how to counter it. And that'll be, you know, the soup du jour or whatever for that week, for that month, where people are like, well, yeah, I'm running this build now. And so that previous build, it used to be the best way to play, but now this is the best way to play. And that stuff's going to happen constantly.
I mean, Erk did that for me when he was talking about playing the Warlock. A while ago, I was playing a Hunter. I was like, all right, we were playing Titans. Titan was the only way to go early in the game. Then I was like, I'll play a Hunter. And then all of a sudden we were playing a build and Erk's got the Warlock and he starts just frying dudes. And I'm doing work. I'm not being lazy. And you're just well ahead of me in the score. And I'm just like, what are you playing? He's like, oh, I'm a Warlock. I'm like, really? Like, I'm thinking it's like, I'm like in my head, I'm like, oh, it's like a space mage. Like, what can he actually do? And then I'm like, I'm going to go play a Warlock. And I'm like, this is actually fucking awesome. Like, I even had that, you know, being as close as I am, had that where I wanted to play as only one class or a Titan or a Hunter, and I didn't even think about playing as the other class. And that's such a rare treat to even like be able to prop a build and play something new during lunch or anything like that. Like it feels awesome.
Yeah. And since these different builds, since the different classes are tied to different tactic sets, like you were saying, you know, it's like the more you play an online multiplayer game, something that works this week something that you and your buddies do right now. You know, like we rush along the left flank and then we sneak through this area and we go in through the back door and, you know, like a week later, that's not going to work. Because even if they're not reading our bullshit on the internet, as Jason Jones likes to say, the community will sort of like their collective universal mind will adapt to that.
They'll
and everybody knows that move now.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, we've been playing as hunters for a while. This has been working. But now that everyone has a counter to those tactics, we need to kind of surprise the community by going in and like rolling a Titan or something, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So it's great you put that flexibility into their hands.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the balance question for me is sort of solved by the hand cannon, or at least demonstrated like the philosophy for Destiny. Like it seems like it should be overpowered, right? And I don't know where it is in the winter build, so I may be
I think it's pretty
operating
good.
With dated knowledge. But the last one that I played was a two-shot headshot kill. But the cadence is very slow, and there's a lot of recoil on it.
Yep.
So you have to be very practiced with it, right? You can't just run around just clocking people with it. They're going to shoot back at you, and you're going to have to like focus through their fire, wait for that reticle to hit. And if you really practice and really measured, and you've mastered that weapon, and you really like it, you're going to be pretty lethal with it, right? They're going to be pretty frustrated with you because, and conversely, like if you've got an assault rifle and you close the distance on somebody with a hand cannon and you can hose them down and get the drop on them, they're probably not going to have the patience or the time to really think about those trigger pulls in the way. Maybe they do. There will be some players that are just like, nope, I'm still going to win.
Cold.
I'm still, nerves of steel. Yeah. I still win. But, you know, a lot of times, especially for me, that's going to distract me enough to where I'm not going to be able to land those two headshots, right? So it's really about my own personal play, my own feedback, and my own, you know, twitch skill and hand-eye coordination, all these things sort of happening and coming into, you know, consideration in these moments of gameplay. So
that's what I find like fun in the individual maps that we have right now, and especially the movement modes, you know, the slide and the sprint and all that other stuff. Like when I get someone dropped on me or someone comes up from behind me and starts blasting me, like my first reaction is not to turn towards them and start shooting them. I'm like, I'm going to get the fuck out of here and do something to break their line of sight, whether it be jump or slide. And man, I didn't think that, like I didn't know that the slide was going to be a thing for me, but I use that all the time. Like that is one of my favorite things to do, is to rush at somebody and slide down. It breaks their line of sight. Yeah. Now you're a small person that's still coming at you at speed, and you just pop up right in front of them or slide right past them.
It's amazing. Like we call that the Weldon, because Andrew Weldon, one of our multiplayer designers, like latched onto that super quickly, and he was doing the shotgun slide forever. And once you learn how to deal with the Weldon, which, you know, if you have your own shotgun out, you wait for him to slide by.
And you get a headshot.
You drop a few degrees and you pop him in the face as he's sliding. And it is so good. So, like, we talk about counters. That's a counter to the slide.
Sure,
like,
people
can do it. They could, they could fly into the air when they're coming towards you. And at that point, I don't think we've talked about this a whole lot, but when you use your movement modes, you're actually getting rid of your ability to be in combat for a short amount of time. So if you want to do that, if you want to double jump, if you want to glide, you're putting yourself in what we call weapon down. So you're making a tactical choice at that point. Like, I want to take the high road right now, or I want to try and get away from combat, but I can't just sit in the air and fire on people. That's not the way it works.
Raining grenades and using assault rifle fire.
So how do you take into the multiplayer maps? Like there's a ton of variation now. I don't know if you want to talk about some of the different types of ways we've approached maps.
I think that, like I said earlier, the thing that was really hard for us at first was trying to make movement modes make sense and not feel too powerful, and not make it so that we couldn't control where the players were going and how they interact with each other and how the fights start and end. And, you know, once you add that vertical movement, all of a sudden you're saying, hey, what used to work in Halo doesn't work as well, but let's incorporate that in a way that is really fun, lets you use your movement modes, but also, you know, you're making a tactical choice when you're using your movement modes. So in that respect, you know, our maps are going to feel sort of, you know, in some respects they'll feel Halo-like, I guess, but I would attribute that to more like a Bungie sort of sensibility of how we design maps and in terms of how they look and sort of the big dynamic things that we have going. You know, there's been videos that have been released on the map we internally call Rooftops that has the big dynamic fan on it. but things like that are really interesting to us, and controlling players but also allowing them a freedom of movement has been a really tough balancing act, but I feel like we've gotten it into a really good space. And the other thing that's really, I don't think we've talked about this publicly yet, but these maps are made specifically for competitive multiplayer. So they may happen, they may take place on Mars, but they'll take place in a different location than, say, where the public events are happening. So these maps are specifically designed 100% from the ground up to be awesome for competitive multiplayer.
And that was a bomb.
Podcast exclusive.
Thanks, Deej. Waiting for it.
We kind of backed into that a little bit on the circuit. People were asking us if they were happening in public spaces. And I mean, it's pretty clear that what we don't want to have happen is somebody's just happily, you know, merrily chugging along through their story, and somebody from the Ridge is like, let's play multiplayer.
Boom.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there have been some consternation. You know, people have said, I want to be able to enjoy this story. I don't want some guardian who's a lot more powerful than me attacking me and suddenly ruining my experience. So I think it's an important point to make. And that, you
it's
know,
important
there
for us,
are very specific decisions. Like, I am now going to, you know, leave this whole sensibility of like, all guardians are on the same team, united as a force for good. And it's like, hey, motherfucker, let's go see who's best. Yeah, exactly. Let's go see who is the baddest ass in the tower.
That's what has always made Bungie games a lot more. I mean, like, that's kind of the core, right, for Halo. I mean, like, they had great story and great, you know, other social interactive, but it was like multiplayer was the thing that drove a lot of the community, and a lot of what brought us here was a lot of that interaction. And it's which makes it all more rewarding to see that we're taking the same amount of care and love that we put into all the other past games, and like just applying all of that knowledge, all of those years of training, and saying like, okay, how do we make the best multiplayer experience we can out of a game that's so dynamic and so complex? You know, the balance thing is always a, you know, a thing that brings it to my head, you know, leveling, all that stuff, like.
So how daunting is it to take like that sort of philosophy of you know, the past and saying like, hey, we're going to nurture the competitive multiplayer game. We're going to refresh playlists in that space. We're going to give people new reasons to come back. We're going to change that up for them and give them, you know, reasons to come back and play night after night, and try to create a hobby in that space and to spread that out over like every activity. We say activities for every mood, but what it really means is like, if you like story, if you like co-op stuff or really challenging co-op stuff, or if you like getting new gear, new weapons, or if you like playing competitive multiplayer, we're going to make a whole bunch of new stuff, not just like on the content front. Like, we're going to change that stuff up. We're going to give you new reasons to come back. And I think that the pillar is like something new every day, right? We want it to feel fresh.
We're trying to be really ambitious about that, in the same way that we refreshed playlists and changed things up based on our own internal feedback and then based on community feedback as well. We'll be able to do that for multiplayer, but we'll be able to do that across the board.
Does that change the way you sort of approach? Does it change the way you work? Does it change the way you work with the teams around you? Like,
it just means we plan for being able to do that ahead of time, making sure our tools allow us to do that post-launch, making sure we can update and not break things and do it in a really streamlined manner. Like, that's one of the things I've been pushing on for a long time, and we have to do it. Otherwise, if we can't adapt while we're live, we're just going to die. So that's super important.
Well, unless you guys have any other questions for Lars, I think it's time to say goodbye. It's been a great conversation. We're looking forward to playing the winter build. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Let's
to
ship
you.
A game
playing
this
the winter
year.
Build, have
this
some beers.
It's
going to
be
the best Friday ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have a lot of time left, and I'm really excited about where we're at.
I'm sure in the wake of the winter build, there will be a mountain of feedback and criticism to wade through.
Everybody has an opinion. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been fun.
Well, we appreciate you.
No, we appreciate you.
No, we do. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
All right. Get out of here.
Go.
Bye, Lars.
Bye, Lars. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Leave the headset.
That's all the time we have for the first podcast of the new year. Those are all the people that we were able to con into joining us down here in the Foley Lab.
Yeah, it's nice. Pushing towards the winter build. A lot of people are busy. It's nice that they took the time out to come talk to us and the community and divulge a bunch of crazy secrets that we're probably not ready to share, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's the holidays.
We'll see what makes the cut.
Fire from the hip.
Merry whatever thing you happen to celebrate this year.
Happy end of the year, beginning of new year.
Yeah.
So what's your 2014. New Year's resolution?
My what?
Your New Year's resolution.
Resolution.
I'm going to hire a community manager that can fucking talk.
Good luck with that. This has been the Bungie Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for giving a damn. Thank you for coming along with us on this journey.
Oh yeah, we could talk about the wonders of our studio move.
Rearranging the furniture.
You know what they are doing? So we're having a big studio move. Yep. Everybody over the holiday weekend has been told to get all their shit out, get it off the desk, box it up, get the hell out of here, because by the time we come back, it's going to be totally renovated.
Yep.
But we're also getting a new toilet, which I'm very excited about.
Did we get that officially signed off on?
I believe they're going to destroy the turbo urinal. The best thing about that feature urinal is there's like actual walls on both sides of it. So when the guy next to you opens or closes his door, it won't open yours, which is an amazing thing to have in a shitter.
I'm going to implore you to not put any of this in the final cut. For a year and a half, I've kept men's room poop jokes and the stress out of the mail sack, out of the Bungie Weekly Update. So if you're listening to poop jokes right now, Bungie community, it's because I couldn't save you from them. Oh.
Yeah, get that out of your...
Yeah, get that out right now.
You have like turbo acid reflux today. What did you eat for lunch? Oh, I know what you ate for lunch.
Gyros.
You had...
Gyro plate.
You made a wrong choice.
You get a lot of onions on
that.
When
you should have zagged. We all went to Uba's and he peeled off and went and got this weird gyro plate of gray old meat with like a whack of some kind of just nondescript sauce on top.
Sounds delicious.
Now you're paying a price. That's what you get.
It's a small price.
Yeah.